Okay. Well, I wanted to gather with you guys. We as elders have been thinking about the issue of how we go forward with community life in the church in the coming season. And with that in mind, we wanted to gather you guys for a couple of sessions this sort of side of the summer. And this being the first of the two, I know that the bandwidth that we've gone for in terms of drawing people together is broader than just small group leaders. So many of you are here today who aren't necessarily leading a small group, and you may think at points during today, during this evening, this is focusing on small group primarily. What about me? What's the part that I play with all this? I want to help adjust our understanding of that as the evening goes on a little bit, so that we see that this is, I think, very relevant to all of us, because we're all involved in building community. We may be officially leading a small group, or we may not be, but we're all involved in building community life. And my aim today is to try and describe the key things about what community must look like for us as a church as we go forward. And so it's directly relevant to how we do small group life, but I want to kind of broaden our grasp of what small group is as well. But I wanted to start most importantly by genuinely just giving you a big encouragement and saying thank you so much for all you're doing. I think in any situation where you gather leaders, especially when you're thinking about small group and how small group is going, I can imagine from the perspective of the every one of you, there's the potential for this evening to turn into a kind of a harangue or a rant of, you know, if only we were getting it right, if only we were better at small groups, then we would be doing really well, and we don't do it right here, and this is why we're not doing it right, and if only you would sort out your small groups and sort out your small group life, then everything would be better. That's very far from our goal. Okay, we just want to say, first of all, you're doing great, okay? Be encouraged. If you're involved in small group life, you're leading a small group, you're doing brilliantly. Well done. It's a challenge in itself, and I don't want to start by giving you a sense that, you know, wait for it. We're going to punch you in a minute with some what we call vision, but you set what sounds more like condemnation. So I want to encourage you genuinely. I just encourage you guys anyway. It's an exciting time for us. This last Sunday, crazy Sunday, 8 services across the city as a church. It's kind of weird to think of. 8 different parts of the city where people were gathering on Sunday as part of CCK. God's been taking us down an exciting path. Several different locations, several of them with multiple services. This last Easter, we launched one in Hove and we launched one in Shoreham. And there are all kinds of other dreams and prayers going on for further multiplication. We're excited to announce as well that the gift day that we were going for this spring, which was quite a battle, quite a prayer battle to get it up to the target we'd set. We basically got there this last couple of weeks, so very encouraged about that as well. So just some lovely bits and pieces of encouragement. And I just want to put everything we're saying here in the context of that. God's on the move. There's some momentum. There's leaders coming through. There's plans to keep multiplying. We're sending people to Amsterdam this year. We're praying our hearts out for 2 church plants in Berlin. And we're on a mission that God's called us to. So it's an adventure to be with you guys. And I just want to keep saying that, to keep putting everything in that context. But let me just give you some background on what I wanted to try and tackle in the time that we have here. In June, we'll launch a 6-part sermon series from Sundays from June, just after this Nehemiah 1 finishes, dealing with the theme of community. We're going to call it The Art of Community. And over the last year, we've spent time as elders looking at the philosophy and structure of group life in the church, especially in the context of the shift to multi-site. So how we do small group, why we do small group, what role small group plays has been on our minds. And we've tried to get some clarity, get some priorities agreed on. And we've arrived at some key principles for the way we do community across the church. Let me start, though, before I keep talking, to give you a chance to have a think, have a chat, and perhaps for us to kind of bounce some ideas off each other before we go any further. Can I ask you to maybe pair up or get into a three, if that's easier, in just a moment? And what I'll do is I will put this whiteboard into two halves, and I'll put on one side of the axis, one side of the table, bad, and then good. And what I want to get at is, can you all roughly see that? You can't. Oh, you see it on the screens as well. So that's good. That's great. Excellent. You can see. I'm only doing this because I'm just a power freak, and I want to be a school teacher all over again. I just miss it. So I wanted to get you guys to get into twos and threes, and in a minute I'll quiz you for your answers. So I'll need quickly to get answers off people. I have to be quite disciplined. I have to make it fairly quick. But we want to basically get those things about small group life that either you are not attracted to, that you think, gosh, I this is why I find small groups difficult. It's why small groups are not an attractive concept. And if that's not relevant to you because you've never been in a small group, you're pretty new here, or you've managed so far to successfully avoid small groups, tell us why. Okay, so some bad things, reasons that we don't like small group, or reasons why we don't like the idea of a small group. Okay, that will be on this side, and you've got 60 seconds to come up with enough things for me to fill this side of the board. So pairs, threes, go for it. Stop. Okay. I'll start on this side of the room. This looks like the wisest side of the room. I'll start over here. And if you could just raise your hand if in your two or three you got a... don't raise your hand, just shout. That's fine. Let's all just shout. Who wants to start us off? What's something negative? Go for it. Long preach. I can't imagine that ever happening in this church, but never mind. Long preach. Don't you hate that? Long-winded preachers. Good grief. So, Jackie, you had something. Samey. Brilliant. Samey. Same old, same old. Okay, very good. I'm going to just go over this side. Any more on this side? Cleaky, cleaky. You're going to trust me that I know how to spell that. There we go. Good. Cleaky. So, a bit inbred, bit into the not easy to get into it, and you feel like you're a bit of a stranger, even having been there for a while. Other things this side? Johnny. Same thing, I think, really, John. Sorry, John. No. Sorry, no. Okay, so I'll put inward looking. I feel guilty, John, sorry, because you're such a lovely man. I don't want to mock you. This is me doing penance. Okay, other things. Not missional. Do you want to explain what you mean, Phil?
No.
Yeah. Okay, I think we're getting the idea of what's negative. All right, okay, other things from this side. Sorry? Needy people. Don't you hate them? Needy people. Oh, dear, oh, dear. Man, it's a good thing your husband hasn't got any time for them. He's too busy singing folk songs about the government. Okay, one more from this side, then we'll go over there. Do you mean like silent? Do you mean like they...
Just don't want to contribute or just give out.
All right.
Introverts. Boo.
Don't you hate them as well? I hate them. Oh, man. Imagine a church led by introverts. That'd be awful. Okay, someone that was over this side. Terrible singing. Oh, yeah. Oh, man. Oh, singing, small group. Oh, it's awful. Okay, this side. Put on. All right, very good. Being put on a spot, so, yeah. So, I mean, especially if it's a new environment for you, suddenly everyone's staring at you and you don't know what you've done wrong, sort of thing. Great. Any others from this side? Yep. I think we got that, Tobes. Yeah, I think we had that one. You don't want to go on about that, really, do we? Someone behind you. Sorry? Poor leadership.
Inflexible timing.
Inflexible.
Yeah, it doesn't suit shift workers.
Oh, okay, very good, very good. So Alan's not saying, you know, that keeping to time is a bad thing, but when the time doesn't suit because people can't meet at the time suggested, yeah.
Unnatural stage.
Yeah. Staged. Excessive use of whiteboards. Is that, yeah. I'm not going to put that down, because I don't have to. Any others from this side of the room? Awkward. Awkwardness. Which side of the room was that? Sorry, so, Steve, do you want to just give us an example? Seriously, it's good. Yeah. Right. So getting stuck in a rut kind of thing. Or, okay. I'll put religious. Yeah, I mean, that's such a huge category, but yeah, I think we all know what you mean. Okay. I know my writing's quite hard to read in places, but you get the rough idea. One or two more before we move on, Rich?
Rich tea biscuits.
I think you've opened a vein there. I think that could be the rest of the evening gone, because that's the most opinionated issue. John.
Superficial relationship.
Right. I'm going to put shallow, because it's easier to spell. Yeah, shallow relation. Too late. Excellent. I'm with you. I'm very, very much with you on that. Yeah. Okay. Okay, one more negative. Get out of your system, come on.
Rubbish coffee.
Rubbish coffee. Oh, so true. Where's that? Rich tea, I'll just put coffee as well. Thank you for speaking for all of us, sister. That is a... Okay, same exercise, but the good things, okay? Can we do that? Give you 60 seconds? Okay, should we start from this side of the room this time? Can we, any good things? There better be some.
Wow.
Not just any old food, though, right? Good food. Thank you. Very good. Very good. Prayer. Can you just unpack that a little bit, a couple of sentences? What do you mean by that? Right, gotcha. So sharing your life in a prayerful way, very helpful. Excellent. Honest conversation. So this is when it's, you know, these are qualities of small group that we really appreciate, and often they are when they really flourish. So great. Sorry.
Friendship.
Thank you. Friendship. Homely. Homely. John, can you give me a bit of a sentence on that as well?
The atmosphere.
Okay. Yeah.
Candles, music.
That sounds like another kind of evening to me. And I'm not doing a seminar on that. Not right now. Any other ones? I think we're on this side.
Accountability.
Brilliant. Do you want to give us a one sentence or two sentence on that, Charlie? Okay. Accountability. So we're sharing our lives. We're not independent, but other people are allowed to ask questions about what we're really like, what we're really doing, what's really going on under the bonnet of our lives. Very good. One here, sorry?
Learn.
Okay, learning. Learning from each other. Great. Someone at the back?
Doing life with people who are completely different to you.
Brilliant, brilliant. So diversity might be... So people who... Because it's easy to miss out on that without realising, because you're... Yeah, we're not... One more here. Did you mean the same thing as stability? Open up a bit, Pete.
You can get from 1 week to the next, you can continue with what you were doing last week.
Oh, okay. Right. So in terms of what you're learning, subject, you can really, yeah, very helpful. Right. Someone further back, Liz. Bible study. So it's like stuff that, we're talking about stuff that you can do on your own, but you don't get as far with it because you're not mutually learning. Very good. Rich. Can you explain a bit more about that?
There's some way you feel you can invite your friends into their own Christian.
Sure. Okay. Let's go this side. Glenys.
Flexibility and spontaneity.
Okay. Flexibility, spontaneity. My pen's running out of it, but great. Tim.
Creativity. Getting people to do new things.
Creativity. Let's try and get, we nearly finished the whiteboard, so we might manage to fit two or three more in. Brenda.
Missional.
Okay, missional. I'll put that in here with open community. Okay, this further over here?
Social opportunity.
Social opportunity.
Just serving
Okay, I agree. I'm going to put that in under friendship. It's obviously vital. Dominic, did you have your hand up?
God.
Right. So, Dom, I know you're not being... Why did you say that? Because some might say, well, that's kind of assumed, but talk about that for a bit. Yeah.
To be part of a church where God isn't present.
Yeah.
To be part of one where Jesus, the name of Jesus is proclaimed and you actually pray and God is actually with you, that's a good thing.
Because every community will gather around something. There's a purpose and a focus to a community, and it's possible, even in a religious one or often in a religious one, to miss the point that it's around him that we're gathering.
Worship times.
Kind of going to link that with that. Okay, let's have one more for the sake of the whiteboard. Ruth.
Discussion.
Okay. I'm not putting that up. No, that's right. Okay, very helpful. Let me make a couple of comments here. The one thing that I would add to this side, the negative, which kind of perfects the list, if you like, or imperfects it, is the word perfectionism. And I think that you can look at this list of kind of horrors, and especially on an evening like this, when we're lifting the theme of small group and community and how we best do it and what we should aim for, give the impression that there's someone here who's doing some amazing teaching, who knows how to make all these things go away and get replaced by all these wonderful things. If we could just take a sponge and just kind of dissolve all the nasty stuff on the left side, that would be wonderful. But the reality is that to some extent, these things are here to stay. Small group life will always be at least touched by these issues that we might find unattractive. The question then becomes, do these things on this side do they become important enough and worth going for enough for us to risk this side? Do we think, okay, we can handle this as long as we know this is valuable enough to pursue? And I think if we look at this carefully, investigate what we mean, and unwrapped and unpacked all the green things on the whiteboard, I think we would all agree here that yes, they make it more than worthwhile, in spite of the fact that we might have to put up with some of these challenges on this side. What I want to talk about in the time that we have left, and ask one or two friends to help me with, is the direction that we feel we want to keep going in with regard to how we do community. And to start that, I want to talk about just the background, why community is important in the first place. It's kind of linked with what Dom said about God, the presence of God being vital. Community is right at the heart of what it means to be human. Okay, you've probably heard me and other preachers and teachers say that sort of thing. You certainly see it if you read the scripture. At the heart of our humanity is a desire to be in relationship and community. And when we get isolated, even the chronic introverts amongst us, we know that we're not fully being human, that we're not fully functioning in the way that God has made us. We're not quite fulfilling our image of him. It's what it means for mankind to be created in God's image. The image we bear is of a Trinitarian God, a God who's personal. He's been personal from the beginning, eternally personal. If there was only one person in the Trinity, then relationships would be a recent invention. And even God wouldn't be very good at them. But as it happens, he's been in relationship forever, and so he knows all about it. It's how he functions. It's how he's made us after his likeness. The verse that says it all is Genesis 1. God said, let us make man in our image. Not let me, let us. God's image on us is plural. We're built for community. And this is huge, but it's also hugely tarnished and messed up because of our rebellion. So our sin means that in spite of the fact that God has made us to be in wholesome, healthy, fruitful, productive, happy relationships with each other, in every case, we're not fulfilling that. Even in the best human relationships we have, even in the best marriage in the room, there are signs of the fall, signs of the curse of sin that have crept in. And you see it from the beginning when the fall comes in. You see man and woman hiding in shame from God, even from one another, and beginning to find fault with one another. As soon as God asks questions, they're blaming each other for their disobedience. The fall has messed up community from the beginning. Relationships, society, fellowship with one another is broken. And this means that an essential part of God's work in Jesus, an essential part, not a tiny part on the edge, but right at the very heart of what God has come to do for us in Jesus Christ, is the mending of relationships and the restoration of community set on the foundation of the knowledge of God. And I want to say this takes special significance. That all that I've just said there is theology that applies everywhere, from Sydney to Lisbon to Timbuktu to Brasilia to Rio to San Francisco. Anywhere you go in the world, that will be true about humanity. I think it's acutely important in the context we find ourselves, not just here in Brighton, but in the other parts of the world that we feel God is particularly provoking us about and sending us to and getting us involved with. So I mentioned earlier on, we're planting into Berlin, we're planting into Amsterdam. Those are cities that are in many ways very similar to Brighton. They're both bigger. Berlin's much bigger. But in many other respects, they're pretty much the same kind of thing, same kind of culture. Very individualistic, very isolated, lots of very alienated people. People who would consider themselves very sociable, very good at relationships, but confused about what relationships should be like, and in actually, just statistically, way off the charts in terms of number of people living alone. So Brighton is above the national average for people living alone. That would be true as well for other cities we're called to reach. Disproportionately high numbers of people living alone. And sometimes you hear graphic stories. I think some of you have heard me say before this true story that David Stroud told me a few years ago about a woman in London who was living in a very built-up part of the inner city. I guess it was in one of the big blocks of flats in a very, very populated, densely populated part of London. She was found dead in her flat. And what was most peculiar about the circumstances was she was surrounded by loads of unopened presents with her name on them. And obviously that in itself is a pretty appalling image. But you have to ask the question, why did no one come to ask about her? They found her body way after she would have died. I think, well, if all these people had given her presents, then why did no one come to see her or ask, how was she left there? Why was it that the police found her? And you have to start thinking, probably it's because she had sat down and made presents for herself. Yeah, it sounds like something out of a kind of like a gothic novel or something, but it's a true story. It's a horrible story, but it's kind of a parable, I think, of how isolated people can be in incredibly busy, crowded, densely populated urban areas. And God's called us to such places. God's called us to build community where community's been savagely broken up by sin. Jesus comes to heal it and bring people into genuine relationship and the kind of love for one another that's modeled in the Trinity, which is full of generosity, transparency, vulnerability, and it's what people desperately need, even if they don't realize it. Practically speaking, much authentically biblical community life will happen outside of Sunday meetings. So Jesus gave a model which is a mixture of big crowds and smaller, more personal settings. And this is mirrored then in the early church, Book of Acts, where the people are talked of as meeting in the temple courts, which suggests big crowds, but also house to house. You don't see in the Bible a kind of a choice between the big gathering and the small group. You see an emphasis on both. You see a place for both and the necessity for both, which we haven't time to go into the reasons for that, but there would be very important reasons for why we need to have both. The kind of one anothering, that may be a phrase you've never heard before. What I mean by one anothering is when you read the New Testament, especially the letters from Romans right up to Jude, you'll see that phrase one another all over the place. It's always coming after a verb. Love one another, serve one another, encourage one another, admonish one another, help one another, rebuke one another, teach one another, sing psalms to one another. There's a whole long list of this one anothering category, which kind of suggests a kind of an incredibly, really a kind of a dense, ongoing experience of togetherness, without which it would be impossible to actually obey those commands. These people must have been in each other's lives, really, tremendously together and around each other enough for those clear instructions to do this for another and that for another to be possibly fulfilled. So we conclude that these smaller settings are vital to fulfilling our mission. Okay, the kind of one anothering that's commanded can't apply just to the Sunday gathering, can't apply just to the larger environment. It must have a smaller environment for it to be worked out, or kind of worked in, if you like, kind of kneaded into the dough. So with that in mind, we want to look at how small group or how community life can best flourish and what we're wanting to aim at with small group life. Now, I want to emphasize before moving on, actually, that we're not actually all that keen on trying to bring about some big apocalyptic change to small group life at the moment. As I said earlier on, I just want you to hear, we are very keen to encourage you. Some of you are leading small groups right now, and you're going for it, you're working hard at it, and some of you, you may be feeling especially aware of this side of the table, struggling with some of the negative features and thinking, am I even that good at this? And then you get someone, again, sharing a bit of training on how to be a small group, and you may even be tempted to think, well, I thought so, I'm not going to be able to do it, I'm not very good at this. I just want you to hear that's not my goal, that's not what we're trying to achieve here. I want you to hear how encouraged we are about the number of small groups there are, the quality, the kind of community life that already exists. What I'd like to do is bring some things into focus that I think are probably already in all of our hearts anyway. They're already things that I think we'd all sign up for, but I think it's very helpful for us, the church, to get sharper and sharper in our focus and think about how we achieve what we need to achieve. And we've been thinking, what are the things that it kind of boils down to? If someone says, well, is this small group acceptable? Is this small group truly a CCK small group? Does this fit the bill? I would want to be able to answer that on the basis of some clear criteria. Do you know what I mean? I wouldn't want to just sort of stick a finger in the air and I'm not sure if it feels quite right. I'd like to be able to ask some more objective questions and think, well, what is it we're aiming? What are the distinctives that we are particularly aiming at? What are the non-negotiables, if you like, that we want to be in the DNA of all community life across the church? And the way we've got to, the place we've got to as a team at this point is to talk especially about what we're calling 3 M's. We find a alliteration very helpful, being the simple-minded men that we are. We've gone for 3 M's that really help us to clarify where we're headed and what things boil down to. The ones that we are talking about are mission, message, and multiplication. Mission, message, and multiplication. You might want to throw a few other M's in. Maturity would be one that some might suggest. What about maturity? Well, I want to suggest to you that if we get what we as elders mean by these 3 M's, you'll probably get all the other things you're concerned about thrown in. You probably will. There may be some things that you think, well, it doesn't sound like you care about this part of my vision for small group life. Well, I hope that we do. I hope there isn't much difference, but listen carefully and we'll see. We'll see how much what you feel small group life should be like aligns with the way that we want to go. Certainly, mission is key. And I want us to do this over a couple of evenings, a couple of meetings like this. This is the first. I'm going to just spend, because I've done a lot of intro stuff so far, there's only time for me to do one of the M's. So I'm going to do the other two next time. Tonight I'm going to just touch a little bit on this M of mission. Message and multiplication will come later. But let me just outline quickly what I mean by the 3 of them so that you're not completely in the dark with the other two. Mission, which I will come back to in a second. What I mean is that each small group is involved in God's mission to establish his good news community, the church. No community built on the gospel can remain insular and self-absorbed. So those were a couple of the words that came up over here. Insular, I think, was mentioned. Inward-looking, cliquey, those kinds of characteristics. A community that's built on the gospel will gradually or suddenly, it will eventually begin to lose those trappings because it will quite naturally, become open to new people and want to reach out. Small groups filled with the life of God will be concerned to extend friendship and love to new people. They'll expect to grow numerically and to help one another in reaching the wider city. So mission is vital. I'll come back to that in a sec. Message. The gospel of Jesus is the distinctive foundation and lifeblood of our community. The gospel, in the power of the Spirit, is what makes us different. It's what makes us a different city than the city that we're in. They see something unique about us because the gospel pulses through us. Each small group will be on the road to seeing life transformation in individual lives and in the experience of community through the miraculous work of the gospel. There isn't time to go into what I mean by that. Some of you know very well what I mean by that, because you've been in small groups where the gospel has had incredible power on the whole bunch of you. I'll talk about that more next time, or we'll talk about that more. Multiplication. The church is an incubator. Okay, these aren't in your notes. I'm just throwing in some extra comments that I wanted to have in here. Multiplication. The church is an incubator, or a greenhouse, if you like, for the constant development and deployment of new leaders. Small groups are very appropriate contexts in which new leaders can emerge. We're following a strong sense of calling as a church to multiply, start new services, new sites, new cities. This process is accelerated as we learn how to raise up and more leaders at small group level. So when I talk about multiplication, I'm talking particularly about how we multiply more leaders through small group life. Most of the leaders, I'm sure almost without exception, the leaders that we have leading sites, leading services, leading different parts of what it means for us to move forward, multiply, reaching new cities and so on, have started their leadership in leading small groups. They would have led a small group. They would have taken one on from someone else, perhaps, have come through as an apprentice to another small group leader. First taste of leadership would have been a small group. In reality, what we're saying is that this small group environment is a perfect environment. It's a place to start developing leaders who will potentially long-term push the frontiers of our mission forward as we keep expanding and multiplying as a church. So these are all key elements of what it means for us to build community life. And as we go through these three M's tonight and the next time, and in this series of teaching in a few weeks' time, the Art of Community, I trust what you'll find is that, you know, each of these M's are pretty rich. They include a lot of other things. They include in them these things here. And but they're helpful ways for us to focus our training and set our targets, basically, as a church. So let me talk about mission for a moment. Mission is so huge for how we do community. Being God's people and being on mission, it's a bit like saying hot fire or cold ice, because the people of God is a missionary community. Jesus said, as the Father sent me, I'm sending you. Jesus sees us as the continuing agent for his long-term kingdom goal, the church, the people on mission. And that doesn't conflict with the enjoying of God, doesn't conflict with loving God, doesn't conflict with worship. It's an outflow of worship. It's an offshoot of worship. The people of the presence of God will be characterized by this river that Ezekiel saw. You know the picture in Ezekiel, perhaps, of this incredible, rich experience of the presence of God coming down as a river from the throne, but going out to the nations to bring healing to the nations. That's what the presence of God is for. That's what the Holy Spirit longs to do, to recruit a community of people to his mission outwards, to reach people. I don't know about you, I've found it as a strangely common experience that whenever I've had the most intense experiences of the presence of God personally, whether it's been in a gathering, worshipping with other believers, praying with one or two other people, praying with my wife, or praying on my own, just my own quiet times in the morning, or walking somewhere, the times when God has met with me in a way that I've sometimes, you know, just been heart melted, overwhelmed, maybe reduced to tears, maybe, you know, sobbing just before God. The thing that it's kind of come back like a familiar sound, like a familiar fragrance. As I've kind of got up off my knees or just pulled myself together, the overwhelming feeling I haven't had to create it, it's just come, is, oh, I wish everybody knew what I feel like now. I wish everybody knew this joy. I don't have to work it up. I have to think, well, I've really been enjoying God. I really ought now to be thinking about other people, because that's what a real Christian would do. It's never like that. It's just this automatic sense of, oh, the world knew this joy. The world knew this peace from God. You see how mission and worship fit together. And the thing about mission, when you're doing it obediently, according to Scripture, is it works the other way around as well. These things are complementary. You go out on mission, it draws you back on God desperately. You want Him, you want His presence. You realize you haven't got the strength in yourself. I tell you, the reason the elders pray in this church is because we cannot but pray. We can't but worship. We can't but be before God because we've got big things to worry about if we're not in God's presence all the time. All the time. So worship and mission, they don't fight against each other. They complement each other wonderfully. And that will be a feature of Healthy Church. So, today's subject, let me just talk through this stuff of mission. God's people have been brought into His mission to restore people to Himself in Christ. The gospel communities are naturally inclusive and outwardly focused. Friendships are extended through personal witness, worship, active hospitality, generosity, kindness and justice. Communities of this sort can expect to grow numerically as they help one another in reaching the wider city. And what I would say is the kind of communities that we expect to keep seeing grow and flourish and remain strong will be built around perhaps one of two or even one of three things. Obviously, ultimately built around Jesus, Him as the center, Him as the thing that makes us who we are, and His presence amongst us. But what we'll find is that the way small groups will kick off will be in different ways. Some will gather, perhaps most, in fact, in reality, that would be true at the moment for a start, will gather off the back of the existing gathering that happens on a Sunday. They gather because, well, we do gather larger numbers at the weekend, and so we need small group life for this to kind of work itself out in smaller environments. We need smaller communities for people to be together around the Scriptures, learning, receiving from each other, learning from each other, and looking at what was being preached on Sunday, for example, and applying it to our lives. The majority of small groups, that's actually how they'll start. They won't have to work to get to that phase. They'll begin with that kind of an ethos. Let's gather to press on in the Scripture. Let's press on in the Word, and let's learn from God together. There'll be other communities that won't start there necessarily. They'll start more with a different kind of focus, it would seem. They'll start more because they're caught up on a mission. They're caught up on tasks. They're serving. They're getting involved. They're getting their hands dirty and working together regularly enough for it to feel like real community. It will start to feel like the most vibrant community in our week eventually. We'll start thinking, these are the guys I get together with and serve with, they're the guys that I feel I could open my life up to. And what I want to encourage the whole church to increasingly get used to is that is a potentially still an explosive and positive foundation for good Christian community. Small groups that are basically a bunch of guys who serve on a Sunday, say, or serve in another capacity in church life, serve in some kind of role, but are doing that regularly, and are even if it starts with just this M, mission, that's okay. If it starts with just this M, and develops the other M's as it goes, we get closer to drawing on the Word together as well as time goes on. But we start with, well, we get together and we serve. We serve at the PA desk. The closer I get to these guys, the more I want to hang out with them. That to me looks like the potentially explosive small group. I mean, I say this, it's quite important. It's probably important for everybody. I think it's often particularly important for guys, but I think it's probably true pretty broadly as well. Guys especially find it a little easier to open up to people who they're getting on with. They're moving forward. They're getting a task done. Okay, now, forgive me, ladies, if that feels like I'm not saying it's exclusively a guy thing, but I find it's often the case that guys will just feel, okay, we don't get together to talk. We don't get to discuss things in our lives. We get together to do something. And in the context of doing something, we get to know each other. We share our lives. We open up. We get vulnerable. Generally, guys, that will work quicker. And I know of guys who will say to them, "You've got this. You know, guy's got a problem. Is that maybe he's got some kind of habit, some addiction, some problem with pornography or something? How do we help you with this issue? Which person can we line you up with to spend regular time talking this through?" And they might say, "Well, you might say, well, your small group leader or the guy that you serve at the PA desk with." And what you might find is the guy will say, "Well, actually, it's the guy I work with at the PA desk." Strange thing, but a guy that you're kind of shoulder to shoulder with, getting on with a task, you might feel there's a reality of connecting in life. I'm saying this because I think what we want to accept is that there will be some small groups that will begin with this M particularly up there strong. They're kind of on mission. They're getting on with the task. They're helping to build the church in a practical way. They're reaching out to an area of their city or they're serving in a particular function in church life. As they get further on in that, the relationship gets richer and you're able to get on with getting the gospel into one another's lives and potentially multiplying leaders to do the same thing again. So I want us to hear that the flexibility there. And that's kind of what I was getting at when I said earlier, we're not just talking about small groups as small groups per se. Some of you, you're not going to hear it right until you hear me say this. You don't necessarily need to be in a small group in terms of the model that you've always imagined, but you do need to be in a small group. You do need to be in community, in some kind of regular community. You need to be shoulder to shoulder with people, doing these three M's. So you do need this. We can't do life without this. But we may find that we kind of have a slightly broader parameter as to what that entails. There'll be guys who are doing this very well, actually, but they've never realized that that was a small group because it didn't have a certain format. It didn't meet at the same time. It wasn't a Wednesday night. They didn't have rich tea biscuits. And they didn't do the word section in the same way every week, for example. Or, you know, there are various rules that we haven't perhaps kept, but we've actually been going with these three M's all along. Am I communicating? That makes sense. I'm trying to open up our perspective on this a little to help us think about this. So putting into practice, what does it mean that we do in our everyday life? That what it means for a small group to be on mission could mean a couple of key things, okay? Let me put it into two big categories. Two big categories. The biggest, probably, still, will be small groups which especially succeed at assimilating the new people that God is bringing along at the weekend. So we talk a lot about opening front doors all over the city. We opened two more 2 weeks ago. Two more new services. And we want to keep being good at Sunday being a front door. It's a place where the world can come in and meet with us, meet with God. We celebrate Jesus together, believer, unbeliever together. We're enjoying the gospel, we're enjoying God. And we're building larger community. But all the time, we have got way too many people on our Connect system who are not into community just yet. All the time. It's one of the things that we as leaders grieve about the most. How many people have filled in a Connect card, ticked a box and said, "Yeah, I want to be involved," but still aren't really in community? And the best thing, probably still, that most small groups can do, probably still most, to help the mission, is just to help us get those people built in. It's just to really be proactive. And not just to say, "Okay, I'll give them a phone call this week," but to make it your personal mission to befriend and connect and find their interests and get to know them for themselves and listen to them and build relationship, real relationship, not shallow relationship, to the point where they're a living stone in God's house. Oh, how wonderful to have people truly added who come on a Sunday, meet Jesus, get involved, but they then start sliding away. Oh, how horrible that is. It happens way too often. If small groups could actually connect people in from that stage, if we connected half the people who come through on Sundays, really connected them, brought them right through, guys, we would be actually in quite a different place, the church. We'd be growing a lot faster than we are. Now that's that. I say that to encourage you. I say it to say, this is actually the easy one. This is not that hard. This is just being warm and friendly to the guys that God's bringing amongst us and being proactive about it. I think sometimes we might be a little put off. We try to connect with someone who's new and they don't respond to our phone call. They don't answer our, they don't, you know, we leave a message and they don't call us back, or we email them and they don't, you know, what more do we want them to do for them? The reality is that a new Christian, it says, don't forget, those early chapters of Acts, they met daily. Daily. The people that you're building real community with are the people you're meeting with a lot. So your family. I wonder how many of you, let me just do a quick straw poll. How many of you grew up in a Christian family? I reckon that's maybe half of you. Okay, the ones who didn't put your hand up there, your experience, I reckon you probably agree with me if you're telling your story, your experience of coming right through depended on some very key relationships, people who gave a huge amount of time and help to you to help you through. And those of you that grew up in a Christian family, you had those already because of your parents or your siblings. Do you see what I'm saying? This is just massive. We can't say, well, I tried phoning them. We can't, guys. We've got to think, what's God doing in their life? How can I be a part of that? How can I truly connect them in? That's massive. It's not. I hope it's not. I don't mean that to be a harsh criticism. I think every one of us believes that, but we just need to see the excitement of it, to see that as mission. And what sometimes happens is people think, well, that's not mission. That's just following up someone who's already responded. It's mission. Do you hear what I'm saying? That's absolutely mission. It's vitally part of the mission. Other small groups, it will be a different kind of thing. It will be both. It'll be a mixture in every case. I'm talking very simplistically here, but you hear my point. Others, it will be more like teaming up to extend friendship to the city. So a lot of people will join church because their first exposure has been to your small group, your community, your bunch of friends. Let me just invite a couple of people up before I bring a finishing piece to this evening. To just give examples of this kind of thing, these different kinds of ways in which mission can be done through small group. Andy, can we get you up first? Where's Andy Ferrer? Andy, let's welcome Andy as he comes up to speak to us. Andy's got some helpful examples of how mission working through his small group in Shoreham. So what do you want to share about it?
Hello. So my wife and I and Amy run a small group on a Thursday night in Shoreham. We've been doing it probably about a year, maybe a little less, I'm not sure. It's kind of made up, I guess, of around 50% people that have been with CCK for 4 or 5 years and about 50% of people who have come through Sundays in Shoreham and have kind of wanted to get connected and kind of joined us. We actually started the group because a couple, a friend of ours, a family, joined CCK, where she was a Christian and a churchgoer, but he wasn't, certainly not a churchgoer, probably not a Christian. And so they were friends of ours. They came along. They wanted to sort of start come to a group, and we wanted to make a group, really, that they would feel comfortable in, certainly him, especially. So we were like, okay, how do we make a group that would really work for him? There's a couple of things that really we've tried to do to make that happen, and that's kind of been useful, I think, for the other people that have joined in with us. So we've always tried to have quite a sort of standard structure to the evening. You know, we will do kind of things where we go out for a curry or, you know, whatever else. But in terms of our normal small group nights, we'll have fairly normal structure where we'll do three things. So when people come in, it'll be fairly relaxed, you know, just find out how people are doing, just sit around, you know, crack open a bottle of wine, some biscuits or cakes or whatever else, maybe desserts. So we do that for about 20 minutes, and then, you right, Mr. Jarvis? what we do is then we try and facilitate a discussion, basically, and how we've tended to do this, like many of you, we lead quite busy lives, and so don't have a huge amount of time to prepare. So what I would normally do is find a bit of the preach from the Sunday, and we put that on for 15 minutes. The reason being is that quite often, you know, lots of people wouldn't necessarily have been there on a Sunday, you know, maybe 50% of people, because they're serving, you know, they've got other family commitments. On this family in particular, their daughter's into swimming, so she's out on Sundays, so they're not always there. So we try and find a good part of the preach.
Good luck.
Sorry. That was a bit of a slip of the tongue. An appropriate part of the preach.
Yeah, well done.
And then off the back of that, we would then sort of, we just have a bit of a discussion around that. And then the chances are, off the back of that, we can then lead into a bit of time of prayer for each other, find out how people are doing. Well, we've already found out how people are doing, but, you know, specifically prayer for situations. Maybe part of that is kind of worshipful prayers, you know, that kind of thing. So we try and start at 8, finish at 9:30. Because people are busy, busy families. It's mostly families in our group. We need to try and finish on time so people get back for babysitters. They know when it's going to finish. If people want to hang around after that, clearly we're not kicking them out. But that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to make it very. They know what they're expecting when they come. You know, every week they know this is what's going to happen. It's not going to be unexpected or awkward. It's going to be pretty rigid. We're going to follow the same sort of thing. I guess just a couple of other things we've tried to do. Yes, I've said we're trying to be informal but have a purpose, so have a plan. I try and sort of, particularly with the guys, try and keep an eye on their lives in terms of just trying to text them when I know something's happening in the week that's important to them, work-related or just at the beginning of the week. How's it going? Hope you have a good week. And also just to say that, contrary to sort of popular opinion, you can run a small group when you've got a busy life. You just got to kind of work out how you can do it. So, yeah, hope it's helpful.
Very helpful. Thanks, Andy. Really helpful. Who phoned Pete Jarvis up? Who was that? Who called him? Okay, Liz. Where's Liz White? Liz is from the Racecourse site. Liz, why don't you come? Can we welcome Liz up? Another example, different in some ways, other side of the city. Go for it.
Hi. So I don't actually lead the small group anymore. We led a group, myself and John O'Melia, together for about a year and a half. Group's now led by John and Vicky Carter, which is a great example of kind of new leaders coming through. And I've been to the group, and it's like some of our DNA has kind of been carried on, which is really nice. But just to say, our group's in Whitehawk, so most of you will know Whitehawk's very kind of deprived area of the city. And I suppose the first thing I wanted to say was food. And I know we kind of talk about this and we say in a kind of jokey way, but it's so significant to sit down at a table and eat a meal with people. And I think even just that thing of, like, you know, the first time you go to a group and you haven't got to sit in a circle without anything to do, you've got an activity, and I think that's been really good for people. And I think some people have come from very difficult situations into small group, and just having, you know, a meal, and it's like a distraction and a comfort. And I think some of the conversations we've had over a meal have just been hilarious, and there's been, you know, like some banter and like ongoing jokes and things that kind of develop the history of the group as well. So, like, you know, do you remember that time when Vicky Carter made that amazing chocolate dessert, and that sort of thing, and things like that kind of, you know. For me, they weren't cliquey, because it was, you know, when a new person came into the group, it was, if there was like a, you know, group joke, then it would get shared and explained, and, you know, people just felt very kind of welcome, and sometimes people would feel like, you know, that was the bit they were going to stay for. So we've had non-Christians in our group since almost the beginning as well, and I know that sometimes it was like they'd come for the meal and then they'd kind of scooch off, or occasionally they'd start drifting into the word. But, you know, even from the beginning, we're talking about God, we're talking about our lives, we're talking about our weeks and that sort of thing. So it's all, you know, doing life together, even when it's, you know, just a meal or just eating, and even just things like people being able to bring things. And someone might think, well, I can never do the word on a small group, but, well, yeah, can you bring a glass of, or a bottle of something, or a, you know, pudding or something, and everyone can do something. The other thing, I suppose, yeah, so non-Christians. I think non-Christians in the group has been so key for us, because it meant that we, as the Christians that have been brought up in the Christian houses and, you know, known God for years and years and years, it really kind of sharpened us and made us think about what we believed and what we stood for, and, you know, can I explain redemption as a concept to a non-Christian and that sort of thing. And having the non-Christians in the group made it so much easier for new people to come to the group as well, because, you know, we weren't like our holy huddle that was exclusive and, you know, you had to be a member of the church or anything like that, and it kind of made it more inclusive, and it made it a kind of more accepting place. And I think a lot of the people in our small group who've came into our group have come not via the connect method. Most people in our group were coming in because it was, you know, you'd bump into a new person on a Sunday and you'd say, oh, do you want to come along to small group? Or, you know, someone's co-worker or someone's neighbour. And it was very kind of informal and natural in that way. And I think, you know, our group had genuine friendship and genuine care. There was no kind of forced kind of, you didn't you know, go to small group because it was your religious thing that you did on a Wednesday night. It was you actually wanted to go because it was your friends and, you know, people that you really wanted to be kind of doing life with. I think the last thing for me would be, as a leader for myself, and also I know for Jono as well, was it was really important for us to be vulnerable about ourselves. And so for the first kind of, we led a small group together, I think, just over a year and a half. For the first year of leading small group, I didn't have any paid employment. And, you know, there were weeks where I went small group, and if another person had asked me, you know, if I got a job yet, or had I, you know, got an interview yet, and it was, you know, some of it was quite soul-destroying at times. But I think for me to be able to share that struggle with people, and for someone in the group who's a non-Christian to think, gosh, Liz White's got struggles too, you know, she's not this, you know, perfect person, and you know, for them to know that, you know, say someone like Chris, who's been in our group, who has recently become a Christian, but it's been a very, very long, slow kind of journey. And, you know, for him to think, oh, gosh, I've got to be perfect before I'm going to become a Christian, like, that was never going to happen. And so for myself and Jonah to be honest about our difficulties meant, you know, it was a witness to them and their own kind of sharing and their own vulnerability. And the whole group as a whole, I think, was a very kind of open, honest place. A lot of fun, a lot of teasing, you know, joking, kind of like lots of kind of family feel about it and lots of different generations and different stages of life. But, yeah, it was very real and it was very authentic. And I think a lot of that was to do with having non-Christians, being vulnerable ourselves and the food element.
Thanks, Liz. Thank you. Brilliant. It's Tom here. Where's Tom? Tom Oakden. Can I get you up as well? One last one. Thanks, Tom. Can we just welcome Tom up? Tom's from the New England site. We've just... one or two last things I want to share after Tom's shared, but I think this is another very helpful example. Just trying to give you a taste across different sites of how small groups are helping to push forward on this of the three M's, the mission one. Go for it, Tom. Do you want to come over this side?
Hi there, good evening. So about a year and a half ago, I'll sum this up very quickly, but about a year and a half ago, as a zone and small group leaders, we got a sense of outwardly focused mission kind of stir up in us, and we began to pray to that for things to maybe look into, to get into our community and stuff. And first thing that came up was like a carol singing at an elderly person's home, which was good fun. And then we got involved in a pub quiz, which wasn't just going to a pub quiz, actually getting involved in it in some way, trying to link in with that. And that was good fun too. And then it seemed, I think that probably stirred a small group in some way to start considering it and looking at it. And last summer, a couple of small group members stepped up and said, we're going to do a cake bake for the local carnival that was going on. And they really, really paid into it. So they took days off work. They got people together, got a group together, baking good cakes for it. And they went in and served the Friends First charity for it. So they raised funds for that. And they had a great day and raised lots of money for them. So it was good. And some of us went down to help them on the day as well, because it was quite a long day. And I got the privilege of going down and being with them for a while. And one of the things that I really noticed was that how many people I knew that was there. So loads of neighbours were there, loads of friends, work colleagues, old football mates, old mates, just church people there too. There was just everybody I knew there was there. Well, not everybody, but you know what I mean. The thing is as well that in this type of context, incidentally, at this circumstance, there was a lot of people that you would have known there as well. Because there's about 20,000 people there. So to be in amongst that was quite interesting, and seeing all these people and how they did community. So that's kind of the run-up to it. Now, from my perspective, I was out walking one day, and I saw after the carnival there was a sign saying a post-carnival meeting, public meeting. So I didn't have a clue what that was about, but I thought, I'll go down and have a look and see what happens. So my first practical encouragement from my perspective was I went for a walk. I went out and about in my community and just had a look around, see what was going on. So I went to this meeting, and there was a lot of negative vibes. There was a lot of the traders, a lot of the residents, a lot of the locals were unhappy with some of the elements of the carnival. So people running the carnival were unhappy because of their limitations as to how to deal with those. They kind of agreed, but said, we haven't got money or we haven't got people. It's really difficult. We're struggling. So I kind of then, sitting there looking at it and thinking at it, that I could identify where I might be able to play a part in that. So my practical encouragement number two would be to identify where you might fit. This was a need. They had a need, so I think we could maybe serve that need. But for you, it may be this is fun. We could get in and have fun with these guys, or we could learn together with these guys, or we could contribute in some way. So identifying in some way with your community is very helpful. And then thirdly, at the end of the meeting, I just went up to the guys at the end and said, look, I see you have a lot of trouble with X, Y, Z. I think we might be able to help, and I'm part of a church that may be able to help you. Would you like that? Could we talk more about that? And they took us up. And that was the third one, practical encouragement, is then follow that through. Serve it. In this instance, it was a need, so we went to look to serve it. So that was kind of as much as I did. So I didn't actually do a great deal. In fact, it was pretty summed up in one night, from my perspective, in that route. But it's interesting what God's done since. So they were very keen to have us in, and now we're looking at getting probably somewhere towards 60, 70 stewards to relieve their financial burden, make the traders and locals much more satisfied and secured about how it's going to be managed on the day. And they've agreed to have one of the bands from the church come and play on one of the main stages. So there's another opportunity for them to invite their friends to and integrate their church life and church serving with their friends and just mingle in a bit like that. And we're also going to have another double pitch stall as well, which is going to integrate the Friends First and a Share of the Crop. That was close. Share of the Crop. I don't do this.
It was
often.
So close. It's a good thing you didn't say anything.
It's good. There you go. And So it's just been a great time, and there's loads of chatting, loads of stories going to be going on, loads of intermingling. We got really friendly with a couple of the councillors, we got really friendly with the traders, our local community, we've made links with other charities, other community groups. You just get to understand your community. I didn't know anything about any of this stuff until I went for a walk.
Brilliant. Thanks, Tom. So good. Thank you. Tom was, I was chatting with Tom about that this afternoon, and the specific need that they were running with at first for the carnival, the Kemp Town Carnival, by the way, just so you know, one of the biggest events in the city annually, tens of thousands of people, massive, really important part of the city that we're longing to reach. The area that he was serving was just in litter, just sorting out the litter. The most sort of such a humble, silly little job that no one wants to do. It's just so wonderful to have someone, a team in the church saying, we'll do that. We'll serve that. We'll do the thing that no one else wants to do. And the doors that's opened up, it's fantastic. So it's a beautiful example. And just as he says, from such a simple beginning, makes you feel like we could all do stuff like that and let God kind of do the rest, really. Let me finish by drawing your attention to this. I love this acronym, acrostic, BLESS, which we've stolen from a wonderful, wonderful a guy called Dave Ferguson, who's based in Chicago, who's had the privilege of getting some time with him a couple of years ago, has had a tremendous history of helping to multiply churches, church plants, sites, services, very similar to the kind of direction we're trying to push in, but especially focused on small groups that are very effective in mission. And he's written a little book, which is an e-book. You can get it on the internet, and we'll put a link to it on the city very soon for you guys. We've got a few hard copies of it at the platform, so if you come first, come serve before we leave in a minute, please help yourself to one. There's about 50, I think. If you can get here and push through the queue, you might pick one up. It's absolute gold dust. It's an amazing, wonderful little book that really, really practically and accessibly describes a style of reaching out to neighbours, friends, neighbourhoods in community that anyone can do. It's so simple, but it's so fruitful. And I haven't time to go on about it in depth. You should read this to get a feel for it. And when we go through this Art of Community series after the Nehemiah thing, we'll give this a bit more time so you guys get to know what I'm talking about. But the basic kind of outline of it is summed up in this acronym, BLESS. And what he's talking about in this is that sounds so simple, it's almost embarrassing. But when you think about what it's saying, it's tremendously powerful. Learning how to identify or how to move forward in relationship with people who are in our lives, who we're connecting with, but who don't yet know Jesus, how we can actually bless them. What does that mean? What are the stages it takes? And we might think, well, that sounds almost, that's never going to work. That's just being nice to people. The reality is that this kind of approach is far more fruitful than you might think, because he's talking about stuff that anyone can do, but it draws people closer to hearing the message of the gospel. He talks about beginning with prayer, starting in prayer for people, for individuals, asking God for direction, asking God for help, asking God for success in reaching out to people. Listening, the role of listening, the role of actually taking time to hear. Just like Tom, just sitting down at a public meeting, listening. The things that people are bellyaching about in a public meeting are the sort of things that make me want to leave the meeting and never come back. What a horrible atmosphere. But Tom didn't see it like Tom listened. Just sitting there, I think the bellyaching means something. There's something deep down they're fed up with. We could serve, we could help with that. And look at the fruit that came. That's just one example, but This ability to listen, which is a very underrated part of Jesus' ministry, is absolutely integral. Eating together, we've heard a lot about that today. We often giggle about it, because I think the reason we giggle about it is because we're Westerners and we kind of think it's a bit of an added thing. It's a kind of eating together is a bit kind of, it's not very spiritual. We talk about spiritual things. Eating together isn't very spiritual, so we kind of giggle about it. You go and read the Bible to see how spiritual it is. It's absolutely at the heart of what the way Jesus served people was. He went to their houses for dinner. The way he connected, the way he related to people, the way he built friendship was over the meal table. And the way that God has always done that, the whole book of Leviticus, the whole Old Testament worships, the idea of it is, how can you get to sit before God and have sacrificial feasts to sit and eat? It's God saying, I want to eat with you. I want to have fellowship with you. God says that to Brighton. He wants to sit and eat with them. We get to be the people that play a part in that. Just fellowship over a coffee, over a beer, over a meal, over whatever. Whatever it is that floats your boat, a veggie burger, I don't know. Whatever it is that helps you to genuinely connect with your peers, it's part of mission, especially if we do it prayerfully and listeningly. Fourthly, serving. Just looking to bless three people every week, say. Just looking to say, how can I serve? If I'm praying for this person, listening to this person, maybe over a process of some weeks, eating with them, what stage have I got to now? Maybe I've got to a stage where I could serve them in a very particular way. How can I serve you? And then sharing your story. And I love the fact that Dave Ferguson's put sharing your story as the fifth thing, because anyone can do that. And we want everybody in the church to get better and better at sharing the gospel, you know, God, man, sin, redemption, you know, that's important stuff. But honestly, if all people did for the first stage of their life, just share their story. What the difference has Jesus made in your life? The way we're set up is that we're setting up front doors all around the city where people can hear more of the gospel being proclaimed. I think a perfect complement to that is communities where we have a story to tell. Do you know what I'm saying? Communities where we're telling our story. I get to tell you my story. This is what God's done for me. You remember the story of the blind man that Jesus healed, and the priests and the Pharisees, they didn't like the story. They were upset about what had happened, and they said to him, who is this man? He claims to be the son of God. Do you think he's a prophet? Do you think he's from God? Or do you think he's from the devil? And this blind man says, I don't know. All I know is I was blind. Now I can see. And that's going to be the testimony of most of the people that first start sharing about Jesus. All they can say is, he's changed my life. And the power of that is phenomenal, especially when it's part of a process that we're describing through this very simple bless sequence. So I wanted to mention that, partly to get you interested in looking at this book, but also to get you kind of thinking yourself, how is it that in your community life, whatever you're part of, whether it's in a small group, a conventional small group, or through just the friends that you gather with as a church, what I would love is if we had an environment all across our sites where people all across the church, small group leaders and friends, were frequently using the language, who are we blessing? Who are you blessing? Who are you? Who am I? You want to know who I'm blessing? Who are you blessing? And that's quite nice because you can say, well, I'm on E with so-and-so. I'm on S with, I'm on B with this one. I think I can imagine that being quite a helpful way of talking. Perhaps a little bit easier than, have you shared the gospel with her yet? Okay, yeah, mate, that's good. Please share the gospel. But, I wonder if we may not be any less fruitful by being more committed to seek processes with people, sequences, taking people on a journey with us, prayerfully. You may find that, I believe, and you'll find if you read this, that it's statistically true that that's more fruitful. So, lots more to talk about. I think we're kind of scratching the surface today, and I want to finish as close to 8:30 as possible to give you guys a chance to get home. Let's just pray, shall we? Can I just pray before we leave? Father, thank you for your son and for his church, that he is the leader. He's the one who's building. He's the architect, and he knows what he's doing. And we want to pray for your help, your wisdom, your counsel, your encouragement. We pray for success for every one of us, every small group in this room that's represented. Pray, bless them. I pray that what I've said about mission and what the others have said will not come as any kind of harsh rebuke or any kind of criticism, but rather as a tantalizing idea of opportunity, that we would start to taste and see that the Lord is good. That mission is good because we've tasted it. It's fun. It's exciting. We're building friendships and we're reaching people for Jesus. Teach us to get better and better at this for your glory across this city and beyond. In Jesus' name, amen. Amen. Guys, again, thank you so much for giving your time tonight and, as always, in all that you're doing. Look forward to seeing you soon.